With an interest rate of blah, 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 a mutual fund will blah, blah. Now, does a blay, blay have to blah? As you see here, the blay compounds to blah for a dividend of blibbity blue.
At Thrivent Asset Management, our experts do all the homework, so you don't have to. Put our know-how on your side. Visit us at Thrivent.com. Securities offered through Thrivent Investment Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Blah, blah, blue. Any questions?
At Advance Auto Parts, we don't do anything just part way. We go full throttle. We don't just sell batteries, we'll test them fast and free on most vehicles. If the best way to test your battery was to place our tongues directly on your old battery, we'd do it. But we have a machine that's far more accurate. Need a new battery? We'll install it free with purchase using our hands. No machine can replace those. Service is our best part. Advance Auto Parts.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis. A foodie born and bred, Nikki loves dining out, chatting up chefs, and insider industry buzz. David thinks a great meal is a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under 20 bucks. Foodie married Beast. And now they have the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking. From famous chefs, winemakers, and brewmasters to authors, farmers, and restaurant critics. It's Foodie and the Beast, and it's on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. If my voice sounds extra sexy this morning, it's because I have an extra sexy cold that I caught from my wife's sister.
I don't even want to know how that happened.
We got a great show
That's
today.
That's scary.
I'm speaking.
I don't care.
Okay, Michael Davidson. I went to high school with him. Michael Jacobson is the founder of Food Day, and he's also the executive director of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. He's in today with us talking about the challenges we face with our food system and about
how everybody can participate in Food Day. We're really going to get the 411 on it. It's going to be great.
Okay. And the Saffron King, Baruch Shafiri, is in from New York.
Talking exotic
spices and special dining. And why
the studio smells so good.
And why Iranian saffron is $2,500 a pound. That's what I want to know.
More importantly, he's got truffles, and they're in studio, and we're going to get to talk all about
free.
Them.
They're free.
And are you heading over to dine in the West End? Circle Bistro and Gnocchi Bianchi are likely to be on your list. We have their chefs in studio, and we're going to be talking to them later on.
And Jim Barker from the Washington Wine Academy is in the house with Talk and Taste of Great Wines. Hi, Jim. How are you?
How are you? Great to
meet
you.
Well, we're good. But first, we're going to get over to Mitch Berliner, who's got a live report from the Bethesda Central Farm Market. Are you there?
Mitch?
Yes, I'm right here.
Talk to us, Mitch, not that guy over your shoulder.
Hi, Mitch. How are you?
What's going on out there today?
Hello?
Yes, Mitch. Hey, we want to hear what's going on at the Bethesda Central Farmers Market.
It's a happening place today. I got to tell you, we have 40 different vendors, farmers. It's unbelievable. All kinds of fresh cider. We have our fired up pizza truck going on here today. Sharpener. We've got our great cheese people. We have the Le Dames d'Escoffier running a real big sale on cookbooks.
Aviva Goldfarb there today? Is Aviva Goldfarb there? I think she's doing a book signing.
They've got 20, 30 people from Le Dames d'Escoffier. They've got three different cooking demos going on, and they're raising money for scholarships for kids in need who want to go into the culinary arts.
No, Les Dames is an incredible organization, and I know they're selling like linens today and plates from restaurants and stuff like that. That's great. Mitch, tell us about some of the
restaurants and their homes, and they've got cookbooks and utensils and you name it.
Tell us about some of the products that are there today. Like, you know, now that we're getting like really into fall, what are some of the big items that people can buy at the farmers market?
We've got people doing all kinds of ciders, fresh pressed cider, and very unusual. Toygo today has Honey Crisp cider. It's a single varietal, and usually Honey Crisp, to be frank, is too expensive to do that.
Right.
But they had a problem with like the tail or whatever it was, so they're not beautiful looking. So they turned them into cider. So that'll be around for a couple weeks.
Excellent. And how much longer is the market going on for, Mitch?
We got big news. We're going year-round. We will be here every Sunday year-round.
Fantastic. That's awesome.
Thank you. It's demand from the patrons.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that. Of course, our fish guy has got a sale today on fresh lobsters. They're $8 a pound, and they're not tank lobsters. Most people don't know the difference, but these are real fresh lobsters. They've never been kept in a tank.
All right, well, let's make sure everybody knows Bethesda Central Farm Market is open 9 to 1 today. There's free parking. That I do know from doing your commercial.
Thank you. And we've also have some couple of fun things coming up on Halloween. This will be our third annual Halloween celebration. And we encourage all the kids to come in costume.
What about the adults? Can the adults come in costume, too?
Everybody. As a matter of fact,
I'm going to come as a dominatrix, so get ready.
You can come.
That's not a costume.
We also have a dog costume contest. So people dress up their dogs, and I have to tell you, that's a riot.
I love it.
And so we also have things, all good, natural, fun things for kids to go trick-or-treating at different vendors' tents. And then we have a parade with a banjo player, and we go up and down the street with the kids in the costumes.
Mitch, it sounds awesome. Thanks so much for calling in this morning. Everybody's going to head on down to the Bethesda Central Farm Market.
It's on Elm Street right off Wisconsin Avenue. And keep practicing how to say Le Dame d'Escoffier. I was very impressed.
Le Dame d'Escoffier.
Very nice.
Thanks,
for a guy
Mitch.
From Potomac.
Thanks for having me, kids.
Bye.
All right, so Jim Barker, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I see bubbles. You want to tell us about the bubbles?
You always have to start a party with bubbles, and we're here on a party. It's Sunday morning, but
it is
still a party.
You know, the Washington Wine Academy just became my favorite resource for wine information.
So while you're popping that, tell us a little bit about the Washington Wine Academy.
The Washington Wine Academy was founded 12 years ago, and it basically is an organization based in Northern Virginia, but all around the D.C. area. We're the largest brick-and-mortar wine school in the D.C. market. We do everything from casual wine classes up to high-end certifications. And we're doing a whole series of fun events I'll tell you more about throughout the hour here.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's start with that. What are you pouring for us
this
first?
This is actually going to be one of my favorite sparkling wines out of the United States. It's actually from Albuquerque, New Mexico. They actually make wine in all 50 states now.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually is a Gruet or Gruet, if you want to say it either way. It's a sparkling wine out of Albuquerque. Go ahead and pop this open here.
How do they say it? I mean, it's out of Albuquerque, so...
That's true.
They say Gruet, partner.
Anyone care to... partake in a little bit.
I think we all know. Right?
Fair enough.
Hey, wait a minute. Jim, why do you think you're here?
Right.
You're not using me, are you?
Well, and we have a very, very special guest in studio today.
We do.
And I believe you should pour one for him as
Michael
well.
Michael Jacobson is the executive director of the Center for Food Science, and they grade popular foods, which I think is really interesting. But before we talk about that, Nikki spotted you in the Washington Post magazine.
I know. I have to say, it was really fun opening up Tom's Tining Guide this morning and seeing Michael Jacobson talking about where
it's not the Italian Pizza Kitchen.
No,
right?
It's not.
And you shouldn't go to the Italian Pizza Kitchen.
And you shouldn't go there. We're never going.
Okay.
We're never going.
Except frequently.
All right. Well, Mike, let's get into it. You know, tell us a little bit about the Center for Food Science. What is it all about?
Center for Science in the Public Interest.
I read it wrong. Sorry.
We're celebrating our 40th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on food safety and nutrition, trying to promote healthier diets and also promoting better food policies.
Mm-hmm.
We're the group that got the nutrition facts labels on packages.
Mm-hmm.
We've led the campaigns to get rid of trans fat, the artery-clogging fat.
Mm-hmm.
We're improving school foods, trying to get junk food advertising off of children's television,
mm-hmm.
trying to get better funding for the Food and Drug Administration for its food safety activities. So a whole bunch of things related to food.
And so now you've come up with this Food Day.
That's right.
This is the first one.
This is sort of the first one. We actually sponsored Food Day in the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
and we're sponsoring it again this year, October 24th,
mm-hmm.
so a week from Monday. And it's like Earth Day, but focusing on food issues,
mm-hmm.
nutrition, hunger, farm policies, whole range of foci. And we're trying to educate people, getting people to eat real,
mm-hmm.
get rid of the junk, and really transform your diet. And also advocate better food policies.
Well, when you say eat real, I'm sure there's a lot of people, I mean, in our area, I think there's a lot of people think, well, I eat real. I dine at very good restaurants. I do go to my farmer's market. But how does the policy person define real?
Well, it's a vague thing, I have to admit. Okay. But it's eating real food, you know, not the kind of junk that comes, you know, Bisquick and Lunchables and sugary breakfast cereals, Jello.
I just want to give a shout out to my kids. I hope they're all listening. That's why I don't buy those Lunchables. They're disgusting. Go ahead.
You know, not all packaged foods are junk, but in general, we should be eating a lot more fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains.
Well, here's the question, because we were talking about this on the car over here. With all the information that there is out there and with Mrs. Obama's, you know,
anti-obesity campaign
and all that, it's all, and, you know, Jamie Oliver going to the wilds of West Virginia and all that. Does it, I mean, shouldn't people know by now what to eat and what not to eat?
I think if you ask people what's healthy and what isn't, they'll tell you. They know fruits and vegetables are good for you. The challenge is to help people eat those kinds of foods. Mm-hmm. Now, the most challenging places are in inner cities, you know, Ward 7 and 8 here, where there are almost no grocery stores. There are all these cheap carryouts that make it easy to eat junk.
Right.
But it also goes to the fancy suburbs, you know, Bethesda, Potomac, and so on, where a lot of people are eating a lot of junk.
Go into a supermarket
there. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole aisle for soda pop, potato chips. Take some motivation, and I think peer support is real important. So if you're hanging around with people who care about healthy eating, the chances are you'll eat healthier also.
Mm-hmm.
We also need some legislation, regulations, government action to help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easiest to start with kids. You know, so get junk out of daycare centers.
Right.
Some of the junk is fruit drinks, which is just like soda pop.
Mm-hmm.
Get the junk food advertising off of television. Kids are raised on that kind of stuff, the propaganda. And what it is companies going around parents' backs to talk directly to the kids. And can you imagine what it would be like if some salesman came knocking on your door and said, ma'am, can I talk to your kids alone?
Well, legitimately, though, isn't that the conundrum that, I mean, we're not talking about cigarettes. You know, Doritos don't cause cancer, as far as I know.
Well, it's obesity.
Well, no, but so how do you say to Frito-Lay, you can't advertise Fritos and chips and Doritos during, you know, on kids' programming and all of that? Because that's, you know, then where does it stop, I guess is the question.
Well, you know, with that kind of a thing, I think it stops with kids. Kids don't even understand the concept of advertising. They think the adult world is out to help them.
Sure.
And some people on the right might talk about the First Amendment, commercial free speech and all that. But the courts have recognized that kids are different. You know, but that's one place, marketing to kids, getting junk foods out of schools.
Well, let's talk about getting junk foods out of schools. I mean, that was advertorial as well. Like Coca-Cola would put in free vending machines to a school, you know,
They charge for the Cokes.
They charge for the Cokes, but the machines were free to the school because they could just offer them, right? It's like advertising.
That's right. And the idea is brand indoctrination.
Of
get
course.
Kids accustomed to Coke.
I mean,
or
you
Pepsi
know, my husband
or,
is
or
in
whatever.
Advertising.
When did I become your pinata?
So advertising to kids, healthy foods, that's all the focus of Food Day.
Okay.
Encouraging people to improve their own diets and to push for better food policies.
So what would you say are your top three food policies? What can the layperson get behind?
One is stopping the advertising of junk foods to kids.
Okay.
The government now is actually trying to do that. The industry is pushing back vehemently.
I'm shocked.
And there was a congressional hearing last week to put pressure on the government not to implement some, not even rules, but voluntary guidelines. Industry's even afraid of that. So that's one place.
Okay.
And school foods, that's another place. The potato industry is fighting against the Department of Agriculture's recommendations to cut back on the French fries. And so, needless to say, the senators from Maine and Colorado and elsewhere are rising up and saying, don't do that.
You could exchange the word potatoes for oil or for liquor or...
The health of the potato industry is more important than the health of kids.
Right.
So that's another thing. But the way... You know, I think there are a lot of events around D.C. People should go to foodday.org to find out what's going on.
But we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about Food Day, what's happening, not just locally,
yeah,
but nationally.
You have, I read 1,500 events in 50 states, which means there's something for everyone. Yeah. So.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're getting very serious, but we're also having some bubbles. It balances out. We'll be back in just a sec.
Get the business day started at Founding Farmers with a Farm Fresh breakfast and the perfect location for meetings of all types. Enjoy Farm Fresh eggs to order, blueberry buckwheat pancakes, stuffed French toast, our special waffles, a variety of side orders like thick-cut bacon, fresh grilled sausage, yogurt parfaits, and house-made jams and jellies. Put some power into your day with free Wi-Fi, Intelligentsia coffees, and fresh hand-squeezed juices. Located at 1924 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, Founding Farmers has breakfast ready from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. weekdays to help you get a jump start on the competition. See the menus and reserve today at wearefoundingfarmers.com.
The Bethesda Central Farm Market, you guys, is awesome. They close off Elm Street in Bethesda every Sunday from 9 to 1. They've got 40-plus vendors with everything from local organic produce and meats and poultry and breads and coffee and chocolate and olive oils and cheeses and more. It's really unbelievable, and it's free parking, which I really love because you know I'm cheap. So go and check it out because we go there every week. We get fresh fruit and veggies and berries from Twin Springs Farms, a lot of great organic produce from Bending Bridge Farm. The guys at Walnut Hill have free-range eggs. There's cheese from Cowgirl Creamery, cookies, muffins, and cakes from Cat's Paw. I mean, it's an amazing assortment of vendors. So go to Bethesda Central Farm Market every Sunday from 9 to 1 in Bethesda on Elm Street. They close the street off, so it's easy walking around. And if you want to know more, go to BethesdaCentralFarmMarket.com. If Foodie and the Beast tell you to go, it's good.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with the slightly congested David Nellis and the always lovely Nikki Nellis. And Michael Jacobson is
not yet congested
in the studio. Michael is the executive director of the Center for Food Science. And we want to get to Food Day and talk about that. It's on October 24th. And there are buku events all over the country in all 50 states. But let's talk about what's going on here.
Well, tons of things are going on in D.C. One of the nice ones is, it's kind of a twofer, is the at the National Archives, they have a terrific exhibit called What's Cooking Uncle Sam, which discusses food policies over the past 100 years. And it's very interesting. So they're having an open house with literature tables from half a dozen organizations, including the Department of Agriculture, Center for Science in the Public Interest, Mars Candy Company. Believe
I was
going to
say, lobbyists going to be there too.
They're
like the
be
corn,
there.
You know.
Well, Mars will be there. So
that's health food.
So the National Archives will have it, and this is October 24th. American universities having a number of events. Some restaurants. Another interesting one is the Italian Embassy has a lecture and tasting on Monday night, October 24th, a lecture about the man who started Italian cuisine as we know it.
And he is?
I don't remember his name.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Chef Boyardee? Probably
no.
Not. No, no.
No, he's from Ohio.
Bread for the City has an event. So there are really lots of things going around happening in D.C., and around the country, it's really interesting. University of California at San Francisco is having a conference on food deserts, you know, areas where there's little access to fresh food. And they're looking at inner cities and also prisons, which are their own kind of food desert.
Sure.
Bentonville, Arkansas, home of Walmart, their public schools are having a five-day nutrition and food education series, and kids are building a junk food hall of shame.
Oh, cute. I love
it.
That's
cute.
Well, how can schools get involved? And is it up to the school system to get involved, or do the parents really need to say to the schools, this is something we need to do?
It happens every which way. In Los Angeles, Every Los Angeles County school, I think 800 schools, are celebrating Food Day with a special meal.
You think they got shamed into it after that whole Jamie Oliver thing?
It could be. But also in Tulsa, in Seattle, so tons of things going on in schools, especially specially healthy meals for the kids. In other places, we have a Food Day curriculum at foodday.org for different levels, school levels, that teachers can use. In New York City, we're having an eat-in in Times Square with Mario Batali, Morgan Spurlock, and others. But I think the average
Well, he makes sense.
I know he does. It's perfect, though, because considering his
supersize me.
Right.
I think the average person, your average listener probably, who's going to celebrate Food Day, will do it at home with an especially healthy meal made from locally grown foods.
Sure.
And maybe have a potluck with some friends, each contributing a dish, and talking about the food issues that concern them. Farm policies, hunger in their community, nutrition for kids, whatever it is.
I want to say something because I know we discussed this off air that you didn't have time to read it, but there is an article today in the Washington Post Outlook section about the five myths of food. And one of the things they do say in there is that because food desert is sort of like this new coin term, you're hearing a lot about it. The First Lady uses it often, but they're claiming it's a myth, that it's not as rampant as some people would have you believe. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. Well, the first thing is when you think of a desert, you think of nothing.
Right.
We call them food swamps where there's all kinds of junk, little pizza carryouts and Chinese carryouts and fast food restaurants and the like. But, according to the Department of Agriculture, it might be several percent of the population that lives a mile or more from a place where you can get a decent array of fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not everybody. That's for sure. But if you're without a car, walking a mile with groceries can be tough. So you might have to take a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's important for people to realize that there are a lot of people who simply have very little access to fresh fruits and vegetables. They pay high prices because little corner stores are a lot more expensive than a big supermarket.
Excellent.
All right.
We have to wrap it up.
We have to wrap it up.
Sorry to say that.
Foodday.org is where to get all the information on these events.
That's right.
And you can also go on to the list, areyouwantit.com, and Nikki will have a link to the events as well.
Absolutely.
So, thanks for coming in. This was great.
Really fantastic.
My pleasure.
Thank you
so much.
We usually get this serious.
I know.
Terrific.
But it's an important topic.
It's not easy for me
important.
To be serious. All right, Michael, thanks for coming in. Jim, back to you. This was lovely. Who
from
knew that they were making wine in Albuquerque?
And sparkling wine, no less.
Sparkling wine.
God. All
it's
right.
Really great.
So, you guys, and we went to the website and looked at what the Washington Wine Academy had coming up. You guys do river cruises and wine seminars. You do bus tours of the, when we started the show, I didn't know diddly about anything, including the fact that there were vineyards in Maryland, Virginia within, less than an hour's drive in some cases. So what kind of events do you do to kind of bring the novice into a wine education?
Well, to tie into your last statement, we're a huge proponent to the Virginia wine industry. And so we're celebrating October's Virginia Wine Month, and we are celebrating tours on the Potomac River out of D.C., out of the Gangplank Marina, where we're hosting Virginia wine cruises every Friday night in the month of October, featuring top Virginia wines. So I encourage you to go to our website at washingtonwineacademy.org, and you can see our river cruises every Friday in October.
That sounds so much fun. Are a lot of people doing that? Because it doesn't seem, I wouldn't think river cruise wine tasting. It's a totally different way of doing it.
It is. We've been doing cruises on the Potomac for about 10 years. We did 30 of them last summer alone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're excited to have a chance to see D.C. from the waterfront, as well as a chance to showcase some great Virginia wines. So kind of it's a fun thing for us to do as well. It's a way to get out of the classroom and do something fun.
Excellent.
Unique.
All right. What are you pouring next? Tell us.
Pouring next, we're going to do a Viognier from Virginia.
Sure.
Viognier is now the official state grape of Virginia. It's actually been voted the grape that Virginia is known for, and there are some more than 80 producers making great Viogniers, and this one happens to be one of my favorite wineries called Jefferson Vineyards out of Charlottesville, and it's their 2009 Viognier.
Excellent.
So definitely an aromatic and opinionated wine.
Okay.
An opinionated wine. That's all I need.
Absolutely.
Being married to an opinionated woman.
I see lots and lots of truffles.
Yeah,
isn't that gorgeous?
Well, we're going to taste this wine, and we've just been joined by, and I was not aware of the coronation, by a man known as the Saffron King, Baruch Shafiri out of New York, And you are known all over the world as the man with the interesting spices from everywhere, from every corner. So,
well, actually, I mean, you and I met maybe 6 or 7 months ago. We were at Nick Stefanelli's Bibiana, and you had this mass array of gorgeous spices with you that he was piling through. I mean, you work with chefs all around the country, or is it primarily East Coast? Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I have a good presence in 5 or 6 cities. I'm based in New York City, so of course Manhattan's a golden goose.
Sure.
But I began my business 10 years ago in New Orleans, simply by virtue of the fact that I go there every year for Jazz and Heritage Festival. Mm-hmm. And I had this strange idea that I wanted to import saffron into America. And as a stay-at-home father, I utilized the opportunity to go to New Orleans every year for Jazz Fest and speak with chefs, and began the business down there. So basically, we have a very strong presence in New Orleans, San Francisco, New York City, D.C., Boston, Philadelphia. So not quite nationwide, but
certainly almost a start.
And I'd like to jump in and just say, if you would get to work, I would like to be a stay-at-home
father.
Okay,
how about it? Tell us, though, you started with saffron.
Yes.
And how did your business expand? Because you brought in all these fantastic specimens today. How did it start? And tell me how you grew your business.
Well, it's a very good question. One that many people ask is, how did you start this business, importing just one spice and just selling one spice to a kitchen? It's relatively unheard of. But we started for 5 years with just saffron. That's literally all that we sold. And I came into the saffron
trade. And was there a terrific need for it?
I would say so. I mean, saffron is obviously highly prized for bouillabaisse, risotto, and saffron milanese. Paella. But I just noticed the general quality of saffron in America was so poor. Mm-hmm. I was working in a gourmet food store.
Was it just old? Was the saffron just old? And
well, just a combination of just old and just not of the best quality, and also very expensive. And I'm familiar with saffron growing up in Iran. It's a major part of our cuisine.
Sure.
So I thought I could contribute to that. But I really fell into the spice trade by virtue of poetry. I finished my NYU master's degree in mystical Persian poetry, and studying with Harold Bloom, and there were certain passages in the text where we describe food, but saffron plays an integral role in Persian poetry in terms of its literal and figurative associations. So that's really the best answer in terms of how I fell into it. I was always fascinated with saffron. My daughter's name is Saffron Rain. She's 10 years old.
Really?
She was born on my birthday, right when we started the business. So
fantastic.
There's a real symmetry to the whole thing. But anyway, after 5 years of selling just saffron, I realized that the same process was relevant for other spices. The general quality of spices is very poor, and also in general the knowledge of even the finest chefs is rather limited when you consider for thousands of years these botanicals were the most prized products on the planet and the greatest.
It's why Columbus sailed in the wrong direction. I mean,
the original spice trade.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You could even say the colonizing principle was driven by the spice trade. The very first passengers on the ships were botanists whose job was to identify. But spices have somewhat lost their luster and cachet in these last 500 years as a result of the blank parts of the map being filled in. Of course, the spice traders from Polynesia, the Middle East, Africa, kept these trade routes a secret. For instance, if you wanted nutmeg or cloves 500 years ago, you had to find the veritable needle in the haystack amongst the 17,000 volcanic islands of the Indonesian archipelago. There's the Moluccas, just two tiny little islands. Unless you can find these islands, no cloves for you. So, but once these roots were found, and then, of course, the advent of the industrial age and synthetic foods and such, spices have played almost a secondary role. As we said earlier, they were the very foremost of the greatest European powers.
Salt has replaced spice as the main ingredient in getting you to want to take another chip. But let me ask this question, because we're going to go to a break in about a minute and a half. But how widespread is the use of saffron? I mean, it's in what sorts of dishes? Beyond the obvious, a lamb dish, you would use saffron.
Well, I would always say that you're limited only by your imagination. And with all these botanicals, and I believe botanicals from all over the world, every region brings something to the table. It's just a matter of being open enough and curious enough to try them. But saffron, of course, is known in Italy for risotto milanese, mm-hmm. and paella, the authentic paella, and bouillabaisse. But it's actually wonderful in alcohol, saffron martinis,
right.
You can't go wrong.
Color ice cream. Is so rich.
Anything that you can lend color to, mm-hmm. You certainly could use saffron for. But
well, and I really want to get into the other, as you went beyond saffron, I want to get into your other products. Did that start because you just saw that there was a need for it, or were chefs also asking for it?
A combination of both. Many of the items that we source are a result of a chef asking for a certain product or a certain type of product. Mm-hmm. And I have a rather rudimentary knowledge of what's available in Iran. And when I set my business up, I had to go to Iran several times, of course, to find the correct vendors and such. But now we have had to broaden our range of the items we get from different places. But yes, the chefs is chef driven. They ask for certain things, but also I'm aware of there might be a certain lack. For instance, citrus is so popular. There's so many different ways of adding an acid or that citric kick to a dish beyond lemons and lime. There's angelica. There's sumac. There's it's not a like for like substitution, but it's within the parameters. So anything that I thought has room, we bring it in, and the chefs they try it and test it, and we go from there.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to go through some of the delicious things you brought in. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're getting spicy in studio with the Saffron King and having a little viognier. It's not so bad. We'll be back in just a sec.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest and partner, John Dedon, trusts and estates expert at Odin Feldman and Pittleman. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin Feldman and Pittleman, located in Fairfax and serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about us, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
The March of Dimes in FC Inova will honor women in the tech field who make a difference in their communities at the 11th annual Heroines in Technology Gala, Friday, October 21st at the Hyatt Regency Reston. From CEOs to entrepreneurs, these women exemplify volunteerism in our community. 20 finalists will be recognized and winners will be announced in 5 award categories, including the FCA International Government Award. Government finalists include Chief Kathy Lanier of the D.C. Metro Police Department and Catherine Hollis of the Defense Logistics Agency. In addition to the award presentation, the event will have a live and silent auction and a live band. To learn more about the nominees and to purchase tickets, please visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc. Proceeds will benefit the March of Dimes and its fight to prevent birth defects, premature birth, and infant mortality.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and in the studio with us is the Saffron King, Baruch Sharifi. I pronounced his name wrong before.
You did. That's, and you always yell at me.
And you're the one, usually.
I know.
Baruch, we're going to ask you to sidle up to the microphone again. He's preparing some beautiful... Oh, look at these raisins. Oh, my.
Those are raisins, right? We want to make sure we're calling everything by the right name?
Yes.
The size of footballs.
I know, they're beautiful.
Look at all those truffles. So... I mean, I guess we should start with this. You're in town to do a dinner at the Occidental, correct?
Correct, yes.
And why don't you tell us a tad about that first?
And then let's get into some of the cool things that you brought in studio.
Yes.
Well, Chef Rodney of the Occidental, I have to thank him enormously in his absence today. He had some family stuff to take care of. So thanks to Rodney. It was really his idea. He suggested over a year ago that he would like to do a spice dinner. Mm-hmm. He's aware of the fact, of course, that these are very unusual items, and he's... long since been, well, if not a great fan, certainly a great customer, and he's enjoyed using these items. And obviously these items are not familiar to many, so they allow you to, as if you will, another colour for an artist to paint with. Mm-hmm. And for instance, a Food and Wine article about us in September of last year is about how southern chefs use our unusual ingredients to tweak their traditional recipes. So I very often get the response that these items are wonderful, but what the heck are they and how do we use them? And,
well, do you recommend to chefs, I mean, when you come with all your packets of different spices for chefs to look at, do you come to them and do they say, so what do I do with this? Do you make recommendations, or they're so creative that they are like, oh, I know where this will go and I can tweak this kind of recipe? How does that work? Are you collaborate with them?
Very much so, but as I said, for 5 years we only had saffron, and for the first year or two I was actually given an ounce of saffron as a sample. That's like a $250.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
And now I give a quarter of a gram, so I learned that. But then,
I
as
can
we
smell the saffron.
Then,
it's
as we started,
so
as we started adding more items, one thing that I've loved that we do, and chefs have told me that they respond very well to, we make sample packets and little 2x2, 2x3 bags. We'll put an array of 30 or 40 different items, mm-hmm. and we put them in a larger bag, and it's like a wonderful gift bag to a chef. It's just like a wonderful.
Are you exposing them to spices they've never heard of before and never?
I absolutely am. And
well, let's talk about them. What are these here? Tell us what you have.
These two items will be featured in the dinner that we're doing, both in drinks. I love botanicals because they can be used both for sweet, savory, and also cocktails. We do a lot of work with mixologists.
I bet.
The two items that you inquired about, the word is manna, the biblical term manna from heaven. Everything that I'm about to say comes out of the book of Exodus. So
okay.
It's not a man with a big chin and a large beard making things up. The book of Exodus.
Just because you look like you know what you're talking about, you actually do?
We can't see your chin, so
right. Okay. That's true. And I've told my daughter that whenever she's ready, she's never seen my chin either, but she's the only one who has a little
fire. Mine, I've never seen my upper lip, so that's right. The same thing.
And we're going to keep it that way. okay, so we got manna?
The manna is... in the book of Exodus, it describes the Israelites. They were starving. They prayed for food. Food fell from heaven. It's okay. Actually the resin or the sap. This one here is collected from the camel thorn bush. It's called Hidi Sarum. This one is called Shir Hesht. Don't try and say it because you might break something, but I'm pretty sure...
Shir Hesht.
There you go.
This
is the one I believe the Israelites encountered. The Bible describes the prophetical characteristics. Whatever it was that fell from the sky, they use it to sweeten their unleavened bread. So these are sap that's collected from the roots or the branches. You forage for the bush in the desert, you make an incision, you come back a week later and you collect the sap. And even to this day, a windstorm can pick up these pieces of manna that have coagulated, and they go up in the atmosphere and they fall down and it looks like rain. It's used as a natural antibiotic.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's basically both mythical and real. So you're asking me, do I present chefs with stuff that I'm familiar with? This one certainly was one the chef said, great texture, great story. Great taste. How do we use it?
Is it okay to taste?
Absolutely. This one here, just let it sit on your tongue. It looks like rock salt. It's delicious. Just let it sit on your tongue. This one, no two people agree on what it tastes like. The word manna is ancient Hebrew for what is it? And the Bible tells you that Israelites argued amongst themselves as to what this product tasted like. And you will not get two chefs to agree as that you can pass it to a room of 10 people. You'll say honey, coriander, lavender. And, of course, it keeps changing. This is not a factory-made product. It's resin, sap, so the chemical component, obviously, from 1 millimeter to the next, changes entirely.
It does taste like honey.
But you might notice a slight cooling and cleansing effect. As I said, in Iran...
Like a menthol?
It's like having a mint without the menthol. One of the main reasons I want, apart from the taste and its texture, this cooling effect, I thought, would be a pleasant play that chefs could use. But as I said, what is manna, what is not manna, constitutes a PhD debate. But in the countries that do collect this resin, and in southern Italy, they have a flowering ash tree that produces manna. They do the same thing that we do in Iran. They use it as a natural antibiotic to reduce fever in children, which I think speaks to what we were just speaking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, adults don't use it for the same purpose, but we use it traditionally in sweets, but it's not so much used anymore. But I show it to chefs, and Wiley Dufresne at WD50 was the first to sprinkle the Hidi Sarum on foie gras, which is absolutely amazing. And for me, that's the most satisfying part of this process. I go to a faraway place, I taste, I sample, I have an idea, light bulb goes off, I have no idea whether it really work or not. I bring it back, I present it to a chef. And I think the day that I saw you actually first, Nikki, was after I saw you at Bourbon Steak. And
right.
I'll never forget this moment.
I saw you twice in one day.
Yeah, it happens quite often. I'll show a chef a product that they're both unfamiliar with and haven't heard of it, never used it before. And again, you literally see the eyes rolling in the back of the head, and the chef will go from asking a few questions. And then they'll go back in the kitchen, they'll get the microplane out, get the mortar and pestle, make a broth, make a bath, coat some fish. They'll come out and they'll present me with this. And that, to me, is what it's all about. That's a creative moment where a chef who's been focused on ingredients and products their whole lives, suddenly there's a curveball.
Well, you open up their blinders.
Yeah, exactly. What
well,
do we
are going to,
this?
Unfortunately, have to wrap you up shortly. But can you? I know you've got something in that container, and I want to see what
right.
it is. What do you need?
These are the winter truffles, which have just... This is the first week of the winter truffles.
She already knew what was in there.
I had an idea.
This is the Burgundy truffles, which are just ending, which, of course, they're from Burgundy. And we are going to have a truffle supplements on the dish.
I hope you counted them because she's...
No, I would never.
She's going to pocket.
I would never pocket anything. But while you're opening that up, let's just go back to Jim for a second. Jim, I see we've gone to red. What are you pouring next?
This is going to be a Bordeaux blend. I'll pass these over to you guys.
Okay, thank you.
Pardon us.
Thank you.
Always great to have a blended wine. It's very popular, obviously. Bordeaux's, you're going to find in the United States, wine's called Meritage. And Meritage basically is going to be an homage to Bordeaux-style wines, but made in the U.S. And for those who don't want to pay the per-case fee, they'll call things like a Meritage or just give it a fun name, the name of their dog or their wife or something. But blends are a phenomenal thing in the United States, both on the red side and the white side, for fun wines. They're going to be soft and elegant.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. How well do they go with truffles? That's what I think we all need to know.
Let's give it a shot. Let's see.
I have to say, and I have a cold, but the smell of the truffles is coming through loud and
well, and that saffron is so fragrant. Okay, so, oh my God, the truffles are unbelievable. So tell us about these truffles and where they come from and who you're giving them to, more importantly.
Yes.
Selling them to.
The Burgundies are from Burgundy. The winter, the white truffles, most everyone associates them with Alba, but they come from several different regions, Gubbio and Piedmont, but these are all from middle to northern Italy.
Okay.
I'm actually very unfamiliar with truffles. I've just started working with truffles this summer. There was an embargo last year, which means I can no longer import directly from Iran, so that's kind of forced our hand to look for new ingredients, and I'm perfectly happy with that. I think one door closes and others open.
Excellent.
The smell is so good.
And so we've now started working with this wonderful super Tuscan Italian olive oil, the truffles, tea from China, a couple of homemade granola that my friends make, and some other new products that we'll be using in the dinner on Thursday night.
Baruch, we're going to have to wrap up, but please tell people how to find you online
and where
how
they
to
can
get
see
information
you.
Information on the Occidental dinner.
The Occidental dinner, Thursday, October 20th. If you go to the Occidental website, certainly. Our website, www.saffronking, unfortunately just had a little media. We did last year launch a site to start selling, but because of the embargo, we had to...
It's a beautiful site.
It's beautiful. And we didn't get to get into your bike riding, but next time you come in, we will certainly talk about that, because
yes.
I know you're very famous for your...
And I'm just going to leave one thing here. This is a saffron... I didn't put any saffron in this one because I want you to see the difference. For dinner, we'll have saffron. It's a saffron pistachio brittle, and we'll also add manna to it. But feel free to taste some
of that.
I already
did. I already had one. It was delicious.
Excellent. All right,
thank you so much.
Sharifi, thank you very much.
Thank you. The saffron king.
Now we're going to transition to the kings of modus, Jerry Early, Ethan McKee, and Robert DeCoste.
Yes.
Come on in here, guys.
Yeah. Now, since we have all these chefs in studio, I want to know what they're going to do with all these different spices
that we
have in front of us. They should really want to play. Unfortunately, we didn't get to talk about the whey. Look at this.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that cool?
All right, so let me start with Jerry, because, Jerry, you were in here about 6 months ago talking about the launch of the new Modus brand. It was Potomac Hospitality. You've got 9 properties right here in D.C.?
Ten, and that includes Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, Philly, and Chicago. So,
look at that. Holy cow.
Now we got pasta.
6 right here in D.C., though.
And all those right. Truffles would go so well on top of that pasta. How well do we make that work? Is that precarious up there? That looks precarious up there. Okay, there we go.
Can we eat now?
That is
incredible.
All right, so, and part of your operation, and you guys are longtime advertisers here, Notte Bianchi, Circle Bistro, and Dish, which are your signature restaurants. And that's why we've got Ethan and Robert here. I guess we should start with Ethan, because you've got a new place, basically. You've got a renovated Circle Bistro. Tell us about it. Tell us what you're working with now.
We just reopened on Thursday, and we had a soft opening, and it went very well. What we've done with the new menu is kind of taken it back to traditional French bistro food. We have a few of the standards that you would expect to see at a bistro: steak tartare, col foie gras. And then also we've tried to change the lunch menu a little bit to make it more on the lighter side a little bit. And that's one of the things that we brought in today.
Well, I think people should know. I mean, Circle Bistro was definitely more before the renovation of a fine dining restaurant. So you're sort of changing the concept a bit. How did the, how does the interior change?
Well, the dining room mainly had a facelift. We removed all the wallpaper, and now we have fresh paint, new carpeting, floors being refinished, bars refinished. So the restaurant looks really, really slick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so as you were putting together your new menu, were you just, how did you decide to sort of go the bistro route as opposed to something else?
I just, you know, I think, you know, you see all the new restaurants that are opening up these days, and I think that's just the general trend in the restaurant business right now is more casual. I think...
Well, people still want to eat well, but they just don't need white tablecloths in order
exactly.
to do that.
You know, we're still, you know, we're still using the same ingredients that you are going to find at any of the top fine dining restaurants in the city. We buy from the same purveyors. You know, we use the same high-quality fish, vegetables, use local farmers, all that as well. But we'd like to be able to offer that at a lower price point than...
Well, these days, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
I think that's what people are looking for,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
You know. And so tell us about some of the highlights on your menu. You brought in, what?
We're going to have to take a break first, and then we want to talk more to Ethan and to Robert DeCoste. This is Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We'll be right back.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud.
Get the business day started at Founding Farmers with a Farm Fresh breakfast and the perfect location for meetings of all types. Enjoy Farm Fresh eggs to order, blueberry buckwheat pancakes, stuffed French toast, our special waffles, a variety of side orders like thick-cut bacon, fresh grilled sausage, yogurt parfaits, and house-made jams and jellies. Put some power into your day with free Wi-Fi, Intelligentsia coffees, and fresh hand-squeezed juices. Located at 1924 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, Founding Farmers has breakfast ready from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. weekdays to help you get a jump start on the competition. See the menus and reserve today at wearefoundingfarmers.com.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast. We've got an amazing array of food here. Ethan McKee from Circle Bistro's in, and Chef Robert DeCoste from
Notte Bianchi. I'm going to blame the cold pills for all your issues today.
I'm lucky to be here.
I know, you're fuzzy.
Gorgeous food in front of us. So, Ethan, let's just get back to you for a second. So, I guess an important thing for both your restaurants is pre- and post-theater dining. Kennedy Center's right nearby. Do you have a pre-theater menu as well?
Yes, we actually offer the entire menu for three courses for $35.
No, that's a good
deal.
So
you can just choose from any item. So I think that works better for us and I think for the customer because it just... people get an opportunity to try different things instead of having this unlimited one.
Right. Well, it's like a restaurant week deal.
Yeah, basically,
but with the full menu.
Yeah.
Robert, we haven't talked to you at all. So let's talk about Notte Bianchi. Tell us about the kind of cuisine you're serving there with the change of seasons. What are we looking for there?
Mainly, the first thing that we're going to change are a lot of our pasta dishes, and it'll be pastas that have heavier sauces.
Mm-hmm.
This is a garganelli pasta with bolognese.
Mm-hmm.
At the restaurant, we serve it with pepperdelli pasta that we make in-house.
I want the camera dudes to get me trying
here. Okay, he wants to eat, so you can keep talking.
But the pappardelle doesn't travel well, so I made it with garganelli and just put some Parmesan cheese on it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of our signature dishes that the bolognese. It's a blend of beef, veal, and mm-hmm. pork, and some red wine, tomato.
And what are some of the other dishes that people can find on your menu?
I'm going to have a porcini mushroom annulotti, mm-hmm. and I'm going to make a veal, kind of like a cacciatore, with tomato and more porcini mushrooms. And
it's a really classic Italian.
Yeah, very simple.
Recognizable.
Well, try to keep it as simple as we can.
Tell people, a week from this Friday, you'll be able to see this show on TV. And when you see this plate of pasta.
Well, actually, we haven't talked about Ethan's salad, which looks really good.
That salad's awesome. And it's a salmon salad. What would you call it?
Actually, this is, I mean, one different thing that we're doing with the lunch menu is having several different salads, and you can add salmon or beef or chicken. And this is a wild coho salmon. And the salad is a heart of palm, artichoke, and avocado salad with a truffle vinaigrette. So maybe we can talk Baruch to come in and shave some truffles on top
of that, please, right?
Well, I want to ask Robert a question because Mike Isabella was in. He was talking about a restaurant. You know, he's opened a restaurant.
Yeah, but his is not classic Italian.
Wait,
it's Jersey Italian.
I'm about to make a point.
Okay.
Golly.
Go ahead.
This is what it's like to be married, everybody. His whole thing is he's going to make Italian food the way people in Jersey, Italians in Jersey do it. Yours is very classic.
I try to keep it like Italians in Italy.
So literally, I mean, that's the thing. When people walk in, they expect. And you got married at the Medici Palace in Florence, didn't you?
Yes.
How about that, baby?
Our 10-year anniversary is coming up in 2 weeks.
Congratulations.
I think you should take her back.
And if you go, will you take us too, please?
What else could I look forward? You know, because I love classic Italian food. What else would I look forward to that's new on the menu for this season?
We have a beef carpaccio. We're changing desserts. We just started making some fresh cannolis. We do our own ricotta filling for the cannolis. And some new pastas. Butternut squash tortelli, pumpkin soup.
So you're just going really seasonal, doing things within the season. And I think it's really necessary to say that both these restaurants are like little jewel boxes. I mean, these are not your big gargantuan pen quarter restaurants.
No, it's very intimate and very nice. And so is Dish. We have just a Dish 2 weeks ago, and it's a sweet little place.
So, Jerry, come on over to the mic for a sec, because you guys are opening up a new place soon, a new property, right?
Well, the renovating one.
Yeah, we're renovating. We just took control of Washington Suites on Pennsylvania Avenue, 2500 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right.
And, you know, that hotel's been around for a number of years. It's been really a mainstay in the Foggy Bottom area.
Mm-hmm.
And Conrad Kayfritz just purchased the building, took over on a long-term lease, and is putting about $6 million into the building.
Cool.
And we're converting it. It's going to be the Avenue Suites.
Mm-hmm. I like the name.
Yeah, I mean, we're really blowing out the lobby. We're going to create sort of a destination.
Well, I heard, too, that the bar is going to be a red-hot hopping place. Is that the idea?
I mean, it's going to be, we hope, the place to be. It's intimate, sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be a club scene. It's
that sounds a lot like me, intimate and sophisticated.
Right. We're designing it around you, of course.
What?
Of course. Yeah, my kind of place, man.
But it's all sweet. It's steps from Georgetown, right on Pennsylvania Avenue. Great address.
Great location.
Yep.
Around so many great things.
All right. Well, I happen to know that if you want information about the restaurants and what's going on at Modus Properties, you go to moduhotels.com and you find all the information there. And if you're looking for a place to have dinner, Notte Bianche or Circle Bistro are absolutely places it should be.
Well, we definitely have to go in and see both of their new menus and check them out.
Please see, right.
Guys, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Jim, let's get back to you. We had a chance to talk about two of your, the cruises and the tours. What else do you guys have going on that you want to tell us about?
Well, we are super excited about our flagship event, which is called our 1K Wine Walk.
Okay.
Essentially, you walk.
You don't run.
It is walking. You walk into the shops at Crystal City. You get a race bib on your chest. You're handed a wine glass, and you stop at 7 different wine hydration stations through the mall, tasting wines. It was so popular.
Say this again.
The event's called the 1K Wine Walk.
Okay.
It's not a spoof on marathons and 5Ks and everything, but basically, it's just kind of for people who want to taste wine but still be athletic. You get a race bib. You get a wine glass. You get a T-shirt. And you actually walk and stop at 7 different wine hydration stations through the mall sampling wines.
So who's pouring wine? Tell us.
The Washington Wine Academy. It's our staff and a lot of our students come, and we